I've experienced religion on many different levels. The fervor and fear of my childhood Baptist days. The hip Zen Buddhism of my graduate school days. The more sincere study of the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh. The decade of the 1990s when I studied world religions. And now, my new life in the UU religion of community. And I want to take a little break from my prepared text just to express my appreciation. We're fairly newcomers, my family and myself here, a little over a year, and the fellowship that we've found here has been exceptional. And some of the friendships we've made have been some of the best I think I'll make in my life. So thank you all. Back to the real stuff. Enough nice guy. Yeah. I see religion having two primary roles. First, as a tool to structure groups of people living together. And second, to satisfy the personal needs of individuals within those groups. To have human beings banded together in groups, large or small, a system of control is needed for success. And religion can provide that structure, usually with a deity or deities, as the ultimate source of authority, as the supernatural can explain anything. These religions usually have human spokespeople for those deities, and they create the structure, the order. Religions served this function very well for thousands of years. But in recent centuries, humans have begun to gain more understanding of their natural world, and the need for supernatural explanations has declined. This coincided with the rise of modern states, some of which having no affiliation with religion, and these states created the order once given by religion. And science provided answers once given by religion. But religion did not cease to exist. Even in modern states that tried to suppress religion, the former Soviet Union, People's Republic of China, as soon as that suppression was ended, religion enjoyed a resurgence. And this is due primarily to the second primary function of religion in my eyes, in that it satisfies personal needs. One of those needs relates back to the tribe. Religion creates a sense of belonging to a group. Religion creates community, something that Boof does exceptionally well. In the modern world where attachment to groups has become more tenuous, even family groups are spread across thousands of miles, as many of yours are, as mine is. The church can provide a secure group, providing much needed personal services for the individual and comfort, support, and guidance through the stages of life. Marriage, death, education being some of these. Religion plays a role in moderating the fear of death. It also is a primary tool in creating that fear. The religion often promotes the concept of the soul or spirit that transcends death and continues in a state of reward or punishment dependent on how well that individual followed the rules, the order of the religion during their lifetime. This concept dovetailed with the role of the ego in the individual's lives. Many people cannot conceive of the fact that who they believe they are, their ego, their soul, their spirit, could perish. It must be immortal. This rather objective view of religion is from my naturalistic perspective. I consider the soul as part of the supernatural. I believe that when I die, I will be no more. The matter that makes up my body is eternal and will take on countless forms through the endless time ahead. My genes will live on in my children and my grandchildren. My ideas will continue in my students and my friends. My art will hang around for a while, and then it will turn to dust just as I have. I am sure that there are some, maybe many, again, that will find this a cold and maybe even frightening belief. But again, I do not. I find being part of this remarkable natural process completely fulfilling. The fact that I come to an end could not be more natural. But I certainly do not reject religion. I can see its role in society, and all of its weaknesses are usually balanced by strengths and benefits to people. I have a daily practice that consists of both meditation and prayer. Now, it may seem unnatural for a naturalist to pray. Let me clarify that for you a bit. In my morning practice, I do a series of loving-kindness prayers based on Buddhist tradition. I visualize a loved one in my mind and recite the following. May you be joyful. May you be healthy. May you live in safety and freedom. May you live with mindfulness and ease. I do this for a series of individuals and a series of groups, possibly for someone who has stood up in service and asked for prayers, and finally for all beings. I do not do this as a petition to a deity, but to make myself conscious of others and to bring myself out of my ego. I am also open to the idea that sending kind energy to another might help. All is energy. And I know how much I don't know. The second part of my practice consists of repeating and reciting the three following words: non-resistance, non-judgment, non-attachment. I've gleaned these three words from the teachings of Eckhart Tolle, who gleaned them from Buddhist teachings. The final part of my practice consists of a mental scan of the seven energy centers or chakras of my body. I use this scan to become aware of what is happening inside of me. Most of us don't much know until it hurts. I have no doubt of the benefits of these three practices, as when I miss a day or two, my mind is less focused and my body less at ease.
Some of you have heard the story of the time I was walking across the University of California campus in Berkeley from my seminary. It was raining, and I was just strolling along, as usual, planning to catch BART, the underground, to go to my home in Oakland. Suddenly, things were different. As I came out into the very large area by the Life Sciences building, it became crystal clear that all was one. There were dozens of students walking, maybe hundreds, their little legs and feet swinging along at their own pace, and yet, so obviously, were part of a pattern. The patter of rain on my umbrella created a rhythm, and the swish of the wind in the trees a kind of accompaniment. When I entered the BART car and sat down, a Down syndrome boy's rocking synchronized perfectly with the clicks of the rails, with the gentle movements the rest of us passengers made as we started and stopped, speeded and slowed down. Each thing was a part of the same thing, a oneness I didn't usually see or feel. I'm a little reluctant to analyze such experiences unduly, but it was a moment of grace consistent with my spirituality. I did not understand it with my head, but the rest of me, body, heart, soul, was comfortable and comforted, and my head was fine with it. I didn't feel like I was going crazy or anything. It was most emphatically not supernatural in the sense of something being separate from life as I know it. It was just life that I do not understand with my regular tools, an experience that left me filled with humility and wonder at my glimpse into oneness, served up through the very normal avenues of a campus and people and public transportation. For me, both spirituality, which is more individualized, and religion, which is gathering with other people in the name of something greater than we are, both of those are ways that point toward mystery, toward that great whatever that is sometimes nicknamed God. For me, a religion that does not acknowledge mystery, the amazing, huge, awe-inspiring number of things that humans can't know, is not an adequate faith. For me, a religion that encourages the awe of unknowingness encourages humility. And humility is a foundation for open hearts and spirits. Open hearts and spirits can save the world. Unitarian Universalist religion, like most of Buddhism, allows practitioners to join in community while each also pursues our own individual belief system. We do not use our faith to require that others believe as we do, which would be pretty hard given that almost none of us share the same actual beliefs. We know that all humans are going to have a particular take on spiritual truth because humans only have a terribly limited view of cosmic truths. But we do join together. Religious community, when we give ourselves to it, allows us the gift of sharing life's mysterious triumphs and tragedies, like birth and death, and it allows us to polish off some of our rough edges as we interact in loving or at least respectful ways with our fellow travelers. Many of us have attended a memorial service here for someone we love, or not, it doesn't really matter. We weep, we sing, we share stories. Sometimes we mention God specifically, it depends on who's died. Sometimes that name is completely absent, but mystery is present in a gathered memorial service. Our religion does not fear death, but we don't know any more about it than any human beings do. There is a feeling we can't explain as we gather. There is the presence of other loving souls as we come together before death's universal truth, knowing that it will come to all and that the only immortality we know for sure comes from our deeds on earth. Folks who devote large parts of their time, talent, and/or treasure to religious community know the deep emotional benefits that can result when we stop short of burnout, of course. Community members and friends who initiate projects or work overtime or who even attend services and social occasions faithfully find like minds and hearts and are warmed by such community. I would hope that most people in our religious community take seriously the imperative to consider mystery as they know it. Consider what it is that brings us to reverence and to wanting to become better people. And we hope that we all do become better people because of the spiritual practice. I hope that a sense of awe and honor are part of what brings us to church. At the same time, this becoming better people also happens just because we are here with others who will respect us, be honest with us, and embrace us in all of our weirdness, wickedness, and weakness. They will take care of us when we need it, allow themselves to be cared for when they need it, and will be committed to having fun together. We will join in finding a church-wide passion for outreach leading to justice. Our fellow church people will hold our hands as we die and rejoice when new people are born. I too have a spiritual practice, and mine has two parts, only one of which is woo-woo at all. And that part, ironically enough, is closely associated with the natural. First, I face and I call each direction. East, air. South, fire. West, water. North, earth. As I do, I thank each as a representative to me of the holy, of mystery. And I ask blessings on many, many people, just like Mark does, on our church community, on the people who have asked for prayers, and on the world. I pray. I also invite the sky's light into our day, even if there's a cloud. And then I do a moderately complex set of breathing exercises, opening my chakras, my body, my spirit. And finally, I lie prone for 5 or 10 minutes, simply breathing with as clear a mind as I can manage. Like Mark, although some of our basic assumptions may differ, I am a better person when I practice.
As seems to be fairly obvious, in essence, there's quite a bit that Elizabeth and I agree about. But there is also an essential difference. And that is in our understandings of the concept of spirit and mystery. If the word spirit was used in a sense of the sameness of the energy that generates all, and if spiritual meant that one was in touch with that energy and sameness, I would be happy to use the term. But the term carries far, far more baggage than that, and often jumps into the realm of the supernatural. In my acceptance of all as natural, I exclude spirit and even mystery with a capital M. What may be called mystery, I would call ignorance. Our ignorance, as very limited creatures to understand the vast, unknowable unfolding of the universe. Now, mystery is a much more friendly, warmer way to express this. But I prefer to express it as ignorance, in that it reflects my Buddhist roots, and it also points to our weaknesses in hopes of leading us to the lost humility of our species and countering some of the mess that we have created.
Creating this experience with Mark has been an exceptionally fruitful experience for me. It has embodied the best of Unitarian Universalism for me. Individuals speaking directly to each other, listening carefully, reading each other's words carefully and making suggestions, and then seeing where there is fundamental agreement and disagreement. Mark's analysis of our fundamental position seems accurate to me. As I reflect on our differences, they almost seem to result from being different kinds of people. Mark with a sort of more skeptical turn of mind, and me with that longing to be immersed in matters of spirit. A spirit, as I use the term, involving nothing supernatural, just part of the natural that we don't understand. This exercise has taught me that there are real differences among Unitarian Universalists and that we are not served by fuzzy thinking that declares that we are all alike at heart. It has also taught me that a bunch of differences can exist that need not be impediments if certain samenesses are there. Humility about how little we know, which leads us to respect the paths of others. And reverence for the beautiful and awe-filled system we live in. Those are Mark's words. A system whose mystery with a small m leads us in our ignorance, to the deep meaning of being part of something so much larger than we are.